Welcome to the Planning Board meeting, October 1st, 2025. The time is 6:30 PM.
Are we good?
Yes.
All right, I'd like to call the October 1st meeting of the Candia Planning Board to order. Please rise and say the pledge of allegiance to the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Ooh.
All right.
Roll call, Judy.
Here.
Mark is excused. He's at an event. Tim is here. Brian.
Here.
Dave.
Here.
Linda.
Here.
And Kevin.
Present.
There we go. Had to be different.
No, I just didn't want to say here. Like
yeah, I know. I was noticing that too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The New England way.
We were right over there, yeah, but now we're here.
Yeah. Exactly. We came in over there.
So the first order of business, we are going to postpone because Bob is not here yet. He has conversed with Megan and is planning on being here, so we will... I guess we'll jump to approval of minutes for September 17th.
They look good to me.
Yeah, I thought they were all good.
Make a motion to accept the minutes.
I'll second.
All right. And Judy.
Yes.
Tim, yes. Brian.
Yes.
Dave.
Yes.
Linda.
Yes.
And Kevin.
Yes.
All right. Probably switch that to just a, you know, all those in favor.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
So let's jump into the zoning ordinance amendments.
Mm.
Ah, here we go.
Oh, no.
I gotta just fix this up a little bit.
Hey,
Bobby. Hello there.
Hi. We're right back.
We will be a few minutes more. So the idea here is to start talking about kind of do what we did last year in terms of the ADU ordinances and stuff that we talked about and some of the zoning regulation changes, just flush it out over meeting after meeting after meeting and get to a point where we're in pretty good shape, and hopefully we're as successful this time around as last. The two things that Megan pulled for us, and I haven't had a chance to review the campground stuff, were the solar and the campground ordinances. I read all of the zoning of all of the solar stuff, and I think that Stan Peck's letter from Josh, I think that's that younger guy who showed up at a couple of meetings. I don't agree with everything he said, but it's a fairly good summary of some of the items that we need to talk about, if you look here at roof mounted systems, some of them said much higher, but the majority that I read did say 10 inches above the roof line. And I think that's probably a good number to stick with. It's also in the Southern Hampshire Planning, or have we put that other document together? We put that together.
This was actually Clean Energy New Hampshire. This was from
Clean Energy
webinar.
Mm-hmm. They were at that same number, and I think that makes some sense. In other height restrictions, the 20 feet restriction also seems to make sense for freestanding. So there's a lot of stuff in here that's actually pretty good.
So can I ask you a question about that 10 inches?
Yeah.
So they can be laid flat on the roof But they, so if they want to angle it in a direction, it can't be angled more than 10 inches off the roof.
Or go past
the maximum height.
The maximum height.
Okay. Well, it wouldn't exceed the roof anyways, the ridge.
Right. And some
even
other things.
At 10 inches, it wouldn't.
Yeah. So, and some other things, and I'm trying to just kill some time here. Some other things we need to think about, right, is right now we don't even talk about, we don't have anything about residential stuff as to what's acceptable or not. Mm-hmm. And so we want to come up with a residential, like it's just going to be for your house, basically. And that's just pulling a building permit. But we need to kind of define what that is and what the standards for it are, right? So that, you know, like that 10-inch off-the-roof maximum.
Right. Well, and like, how is that read? Solar collection system shall not exceed the maximum allowed height in any zoning district by more than 10 inches for pitched roofs and 5 feet for flat roofs. Is that 10 inches from the bottom of the panel, or is that 10 inches total?
What that particular thing is saying is 10 inches, like, if what's our maximum height?
35, I think.
Yeah, okay. So they couldn't be more than 45 feet. But I like the idea of not making it more than 10 inches above the roof line.
45 feet, so 10 inches.
Oh, yeah, 10 inches, excuse me. 35 plus 10, 35 feet.
Inches. Under 36 feet.
I got it. Okay, yeah. Okay. Yeah. So if you ran a laser from the roof, okay. So 10 inches, yeah. Got it, I understand.
But personally, I'd be more amenable to the 10 inches off the roof and not more than the maximum allowable height. So if you have to hold the panel 10 inches shy of the peak of the roof, so be it. Personally, I just think that, why mess with the height thing of the roof? That was my take on it. Mm-hmm. You know, but we certainly want to make those things easy for people to
understand. Yep,
put in,
definitely.
And we're going to need to just, mm-hmm. You know. So there's kind of like.
Thank you for your patience.
Oh, no problem. we were killing some time talking about other things that we'll jump in once you're done.
Well, I got a story today. I had my bladder removed in June, and anybody else ever have a uroscopy?
No, thank God.
You wear a bag instead of a bladder? Well, they have to be emptied on a regular basis, and when you're stuck in the traffic and you can't empty it, that's what happens.
Things happen.
Wow.
See, I would have said I spilled coffee.
Right. You did.
Exactly.
But 809 miles in 12 hours and 10 minutes, not bad, right?
Oh, my. Goodness. I hope this is not the only reason you're here.
Right.
No, I came back here to see this piece of property I have. I normally spend time every summer here, but this summer was different.
All right, well, let me just read this in to officially open hearing. This is a continuation of informational hearing. Applicant, and I'm not going to say your last name correctly, Robert
Kupetz,
7110 Pine Burr Lane, Sylvania, Ohio, 43560. Property location, Critchett Road, 279 Critchett Road, Candia, New Hampshire, map 407, lot 9. Intent to subdivide a 3-acre building lot with 200 feet of road frontage at the corner of Island and Critchett Roads, and use the 60-foot access on Critchett 60-foot access on Critchett Road to access a potential building lot on remaining 37 acres. 60-foot access at 279 Critchett Road was previously approved by Town Road Agent Dennis Lewis. And so, just to put this into the recording, you couldn't speak, but we could, you know, you could hear us. And
yeah, that was interesting.
We did do the informational hearing, and we did determine that you had enough road frontage to be able to have 200 feet for each lot. But the main question from our perspective was, because it's on a corner, was the driveways for the two lots. And I think Megan or you have talked to the road agent.
Yeah, I've talked to Megan about it. She explained. Yeah.
And so, Megan, I don't know if you want to, I know you talked with Jeff. He was supposed to be here tonight, but he ended up not being able to make it. So I don't know if you want to summarize what he said to you.
Yeah. So he was able to take a look at the property and the corner of Crichton Island. And he said it is a little dicey because of the intersection. And he believes it's pretty hilly over there as well. However, he doesn't see a problem with if the driveway is all the way at the very edge of the property on Island Road, like all the way to the right, it would have sufficient sight distance and would be far away enough from the intersection that he would be comfortable putting a driveway there.
All the way to the left. So that is that 60-foot spot, or are you...
No, all the way.
All the way to the right. Okay, so up, so not using the 60-foot
strip. Looking from the road into the property.
Yeah.
It's at the far left.
It's at the far left, yeah. So not using the 60-foot strip, but using 140 feet
or whatever. The 190 there, whatever.
But aren't you going to need two driveways?
No, you have two driveways, but the other one can be on...
The 60-foot.
Could be on Island.
Right. Can be on Island.
Right.
Yes.
Right, one would be on Crichton, one would be on Island.
No, wait a minute.
Now, the first one would probably be on Island, and the second one would be on Crichton.
Correct.
Yeah, that's still Crichton, because it's badly intersected.
The 60 feet that I used now is on Crichton Road.
Correct.
Okay. And the furthest end of my property on Crichton Road.
Right. Yeah, but he's talking about the site distance. It's a might be a problem there, because it goes down. The site distance coming in and out of that driveway.
So in Jeff's Jeff's response,
out of that 60-foot right of way that you want for a driveway, he's talking about site distance, using that as a driveway, that it's poor site distance.
From where to where?
For traffic coming back and forth on Crichton Road.
Can I pause for a second?
Go ahead.
Did the road agent discussed the idea of two driveways? Because if there's subdivision going on, there needs to be two driveways, right?
Well, it could be one driveway and fork it. You know, you can have two houses on the driveway.
You can have a shared driveway, too.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
We love that.
Yeah, we did. We've done it.
I know we... I thought it was kind of old.
No,
old
you can still do it. You can have 400 feet.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I think I may have said it really a little confusing. So the 60-foot access to access from Crichton is fine.
Okay.
He was talking about the new proposed driveway that might happen would have to be on Island all the way to the far side of the
park. Oh,
okay.
Yes.
Perfect. Gotcha. All right, gotcha. Okay.
To answer your question about that, so when I bought the 43 acres back in 1979, okay, 4 years after that, I had it surveyed for the first time by a registered surveyor, okay, and at the same time surveyed off that 3-acre lot, okay, that Don Kerouac lives in now, okay.
407-10.
285.
Yeah, it's 407-10.
Yeah, right, okay.
Yeah. So, in the 60-foot that I cut off, separated from that boundary on that side of my property, I did that because to get to the back part of the property, that was the easiest way to get back there. Okay.
Gotcha.
And it's always been my intention of trying to access the back of the property, and that was it. And I told the board back then that there was quite a discussion there, because initially there was some hesitation about approving what I was trying to do. And I told him, well, I don't plan on put, you know, the concern was that I was going to use that 60-foot right-of-way and develop the back part and have lots back there. And I said, no. Yeah. And I think my my 46 years of not doing that kind of proves that my
self-evident.
Yeah. Don't you think?
Well, it's kind of funny because when we looked at this, we said, who the hell ever did that, put that lot in there like that? Now we know who did and why.
Yeah. I would love to say that there are a lot of developers in town today that would love to get your lot and do just that. Yeah. So
no,
I hope that you think for the future in possibly doing something to keep that from happening.
When I leave, it's going to go in trust and for my children and grandchildren and all that other stuff. It's never intended to be developed. Okay, but if I wanted to do it, I'd have to cross that bridge. That's a different bridge, but I'm not here to try and do that.
Yeah.
Let me just ask the other question was, Don Kerouac has a driveway right there on Critchett Road. Okay, and it's at one end of the lot, okay, which is the closest end to the corner, okay,
mm-hmm.
And how someone could have a problem with using that 60-foot right-of-way as a driveway because of the proximity to the corner doesn't make much sense to me, because there's one closer to the corner,
yeah,
and there's one right across the street from me that the house has been there for a long time.
We misread what Megan said. So, yeah, the road agent says, yeah, that 60-foot is that's perfect. That's fine. That'd be a good driveway access for that west side.
For me to do
side.
Whatever I want to do back there.
Right, west side lot, we'll call it, okay? And the right side lot, he would like the driveway access to be on Island, not on Critchett.
Let me ask you ladies and gentlemen, one thing. I've spoken to surveyors and what's going to be unveiled. The whole motivation for me to do this, here I am, 75 years old, is, you know, I always want to do something with this piece of property. I grew up in Laconia, okay, and the first thing I bought when I graduated from college was that piece of land. And it's always been my intention of doing something back here in New Hampshire. I married a girl from Toledo, Ohio. And
came over.
That ruined that. See, women do that to you all the time.
and she has never been to the land. She has. Oh, wow. No, she's never been. You know, she hears about it. My kids have been to it. But the only time it ever comes up is, why don't you sell that? And I said, well, you don't understand that. But anyway. So, in talking to the surveyors and whatnot, I intentionally didn't go in and have anything surveyed prior to this meeting because I don't know what's going to happen, and it's not cheap getting anything done anymore. But, you know, my contention, and I've walked the land, and most of the time I spend in the back, and I have been across that front, but not as frequently as going in the back. I don't know what is most I'm not sure, I have to walk that again. I don't know what of that frontage on the corner there, okay, on, you know, 228 feet on Island and 190 feet on Critchett. I don't know what would be the most attractive lot for some prospective buyer to have, okay, given the terrain and all that other stuff. My question is, if I have a, and I'm not going to, I prefer not to, I'm going to try and do is, I don't even know if I'm going to sell. I don't want to sell it, but the only way I can afford to build something back there is to get some resources to do it. My wife doesn't want me to sell in the house, no. In Ohio to build something in New Hampshire. So anyway, my question is, I'd like to do is find, and I don't know if you can do this, is find a prospective buyer for a lot who's looking for a lot, and say to them, where would you rather have the lot? On Critchett Road or Island Road? Okay. In order to do that, there needs to be an option to be able to have a driveway on either side of that thing. You follow me?
Yep.
And I guess my question to you people is that a possibility? Is that an option, or is, you know, the driveway? If the lot I sold was on Pritchett Road, okay, the driveway would be right next to Don Kerouac's. The only thing separating them is the water. There's a culvert there where the water comes underneath the road, right by the edge of his driveway. His driveway ends right there at that stream.
So you're planning on knocking 3 acres off to make a lot?
It has to be 3 acres.
Right. Yeah. But is that all you're planning on taking?
That's right.
Okay.
Okay, so if just looking at this, I don't know if you'll be able to get, if you sold the 60-foot driveway and tracked out 3 acres from the bottom of that, I don't know if you'd have enough room to build a house.
He's looking at selling off the other side, not the 60-foot right away.
I thought he was just saying he'd see which one the person wanted to buy.
Well, no, but he's saying up here at the corner of Critchett and Island, he's not sure which side would be the better,
most attractive
to sell off.
The amount of frontage coming from Island Road around the corner to Critchett is 228 feet on the island, and 190. So that's 418 feet. So you can get 200 feet of frontage off of either side, right? Because the minimum is 200 feet of frontage, road frontage, and 3 acres. So you follow me? Am I right?
So far, you're right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So if someone... My question is, if a prospective buyer is much more interested in having it on Critchett Road, on that side of that piece of part, rather than Island Road, is that an option I have?
But that's not really an area where
we're involved in.
I mean, you need to come to us and tell us what you want to do. And you want to cut a 3-acre piece off, you have to decide which 3-acre... where that 3 acre is. Just tell us, this is what I want to do. If you want to market it, then you've got to go talk to a realtor or somebody else.
No, right. But I may go out and my thought is, I may go out there and put up a lot for sale and not identify to a prospective buyer and have them decide what your preferred is. And if he says, well, I'd much rather have a lot on Critchett Road, can you give me a 200 feet of frontage on Critchett Road and 3 acres on Critchett Road? And the only way I'm asking is the driveway issue a prop, which would prevent me from doing that?
It could. Mm-hmm. If you said I want it to be on Critchett and you're on the 190 side and the road agent might say, there's not enough distance to the intersection or sight lines, it's dangerous. Mm-hmm. I can't approve a driveway on that side. That could happen.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. and I guess what the difficulty I have there is from me to you, is there's a driveway right there right now, which has been in use.
The thing is, that was done how long ago did you break off the Kerouac property?
84.
84. Yeah. So... standards a little bit better and safer. So unfortunately, it doesn't really correlate in this case. So it's really up to the road agent at this point. So
right, what Dennis Lewis said in the past is irrelevant, and so the current road agent, if he says no, you can't do that, we aren't involved.
Okay,
it's not really our deal. So
at least the road agent was here. So I have to ask that question to the road agent.
Right. Yeah.
And whatever he decided would be the decision as to what I can or cannot do.
Or if he'd be willing to give a permit for a driveway at that spot based on sight lines and current guidance and regulations. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just tell a prospective buyer that Critchett is a high-end neighborhood. Island is the...
I guess what I need to do is talk to the road agent.
Because we could approve the subdivision, but it doesn't mean you can put a driveway in there. Because that's not...
And I can tell you, just in my opinion, you do what's best for you, and you put a sign up saying this lot's for sale, somebody's going to buy it, whether the driveway's on the side they want it to be on or not.
No, right? I understand that.
So you got to figure out what works best for you in the division of the property, and that's the answer.
If you get dirt for sale, it'll go.
No, I know. I realize that.
Okay. So do what's best for you. Don't give somebody the option.
Well, you know, me preferably, I'd rather have the frontage on Island Road. I'd rather retain the frontage on Island Road just because of, you know.
Right, but you could actually, I believe we discussed, you could add the 62 to the 190 and have the 62 be the driveway if you can figure out the way that you could have a lot that goes that way.
How can you can't use that driveway to I mean.
Yeah, you can use a 62 foot driveway, sure.
Yeah, so.
How long is it?
So you have this piece of land.
2,000 feet.
Well, all the way to the back, but it's
that's,
not.
I mean, that's
past the lot 10. Yeah.
I cut the driveway in there.
Okay, so it's 200 yards long.
Yeah.
What's that?
200 yards.
Yeah.
Right, so that's a lot of your 3 acres. And if you so if you put the lot in a weird cut here in a little strip and have it be back here, that would be 3 acres, and they could use the 62-foot driveway.
So they could come into that lot on a
on
Cridgett Road through that 60-foot, but they could come in from the closer proximity to the corner.
It depends whether
we don't know.
I mean, those are the two options.
Right.
But the one option being is, we know, as it stands right now, the 60. If a buyer was interested in coming in that 60 feet, you know, well, he's going to have to come in and go back. You know, I mean, his driveway is going to have to come in. You know, it can't go across.
It's nice.
Kerouac's property. It has to go around the back. So
very private going in through the driveway. The lot's in the back.
because they still have to have that additional road frontage up on.
Right. Up on Cridgett.
Up on Cridgett.
Right.
Yeah. So it'd be you can slide it right down there.
That's not gonna happen. So that stream runs between the driveway and the road.
Oh, it does.
So that strip of land is just about exactly 1 acre. It's a builder's acre, 41,000 feet. Just the 62 by the 653 strip would be 1 acre of the 3 acres that you subdivided if you wanted that. But then you got to have the whole other side back to
it. It may be more than 3 acres when he ends up cutting it up, though.
Right, get that the extra 120, 140 feet, you got to take a piece off of the other side of the house.
Yeah, you got to make a U-shaped salamander lot.
Whoever cut that land off really screwed you.
That sounds like an irregular lot that we're creating if we do.
No, it maximizes. You know,
irregular but conforming.
Conforming.
Right.
We're not supposed to create irreglulars either.
That was always a big thing. Right.
If you ever go back there, it's a challenge. Once you go across that stream, it's a challenge getting up the backside on the other side of the stream. It's awful nice why don't you get back there.
The neatest thing would be to make that 3 acres be on the far east of the property there and take the first 200 feet on the last 200 feet on Island.
So you guys and ladies, I'm not even sure I'm going to sell it. I'm just trying to identify what my options are.
I mean, from our perspective of keeping lots neat and clean with the proper contiguous 200 feet, that makes the most sense for us.
Yes,
and
it would.
Sounds like that makes the most sense for the road.
Right, because that U-shape thing is really different.
But you're sitting in your house looking at the backside of someone else's property.
Right.
So I need to find out from who's the road agent now?
His name
Jeff Webo.
Webo, I think. Okay.
Yeah.
I have to find out from him if he would bless a driveway being on this
bless
side.
It.
On
I
the
think
water
it's,
side.
You know, like meat regulations.
Okay. Again, that's, we don't, you know, we can't give you any guidance there.
Believe me, this meeting is much more cordial than the one I had in 1984.
Yeah, we're regular people who just try to make things work.
During that meeting, so when they took exceptions with the 60-foot, because I was accused of, well, you're trying to sneak in a development back there, and I said, no, I'm not. I said, I'm complying with the regulations, 200 feet of frontage, three acres. And so I got an argument with the lady, and she said she basically told me I didn't have any rights because I didn't live here. That's just what you told me. I had a lawyer sitting right next to me, and he said, Bob, calm down.
You know? I might have an idea.
Yeah.
Just by the way the conversation.
I think the words were something like that. When I disagreed with her, she says, you can't talk to me that way. You don't live here. That's one of the exact words. I remember it to this day.
Funny, the things you can't say now, you could say then.
Yeah. Just because you could say them doesn't mean you should say them.
Exactly.
That's very true.
There's a lot of bigger problems nowadays than there was back in 1984.
That's true, too.
I even brought my thing in.
So I hopefully you know, you got the lay of the land here, that, you know, what you need to find out, and if you decide you want to put the approval in, hopefully you can get Zoom to work. You don't have to drive all the way back out here.
I don't mind driving back here. It's just, you know, it's been a challenging year, that's all. You know, I like coming back here. I'm going to be here another week, and I may come back. My daughter's getting married the 18th of October, and her name's Megan.
And she's in Candia?
So what's that?
She's in Candia?
No, she's in Atlanta, Georgia.
Oh boy.
her fiance works for Delta Airlines.
Nice.
And she's a school teacher down there.
Hey, thanks, Bob. Nice meeting you.
Nice meeting you. Thank you for your time.
Good luck. Drive safely.
Yeah.
It was an interesting drive.
How many hours?
Too many.
You said 18, right?
What?
How many hours was it?
About 18.
12 hours. And 12 minutes. But I've done it before, but different time of day. I drove a school bus for 12 years after I retired, and I used to, when I had to start work, I'd be here on Sunday and have to be at work on Monday at 6:15 in the morning, and I often wouldn't leave until 6 o'clock on Sunday evening, and I made it several times.
Wow,
that's kind of close.
But it's easy to drive that at night when there's no traffic.
Yeah,
than
those
now.
Big trucks and stuff. That was our first day, would be from here to Ohio.
Thank you. This is my good friend. I talked to her many times.
She's been very
helpful.
Well,
for me.
Good.
Yeah.
It's
weird.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I'll
talk
to you tomorrow. We can get you in touch with Jeff.
Okay. Yeah, if I could meet him, you know, I'm gonna be here this week, and if I could, that's what I'm interested in doing, sitting down and talking.
Absolutely. Okay. I'll try to make that happen for you.
Thank you very much.
I don't believe you. Show me your medical record.
I heard the term TMI.
Yeah.
All right. Now.
TMI. I just wanted to bring up, have we had any communication with Nate on the...
I have not. I have not heard back on the school board stuff or the...
On the construction, stuff. You know, for the roundabout and all that
no,
stuff.
No, I have not heard back on that either.
Because that date is... I mean, if they're still on schedule.
Well, the last we heard was that they weren't sure.
I know, there was a lot of
budget cuts, and right. It was kind of up in the air as to whether or not. And I will.
And that's what.
I gotta reach out to Nate and. Well,
John,
I'm gonna reach out
John
to
John Stevens
Nate.
Said too that, you know, they've cut a bunch of stuff. So we just should find out if we're still on track or it's been shelved or what.
Because I'll reach out to Nate because I also want to talk to him on. We've got nothing, absolutely, that much progress on Hop 2 out of camp.
Wow.
Nothing, right? They showed, there was a meeting, I was somewhere, I was out of town or whatever, I could not make the meeting,
You weren't here.
I wasn't here.
Yeah.
I was somewhere. And and literally, the meeting lasted like 10 minutes because Cam had nothing prepared.
Wow. It's been months.
It's been a year.
Yeah.
Was phase two.
For phase two.
And it was painful with the first one with it, too.
And I went to the post office last week, and guess who I ran into there?
Cam?
Carla. Who was like the chairman of the HOP committee.
Right.
Oh.
It's like, oh, you
shit. Was she in the planning board in the 80s?
So I will call Nate to talk about both of those things, because he can put some heat on Cam.
Yeah.
Yeah, because when Nate was in here, a couple months ago now?
Yeah, all of that, probably.
Yeah, he said that the last time he talked to them, they didn't know because of...
because of budget cuts.
Because of budget cuts, where that stood. So.
I think that's what John Stevens alluded to, too, from the executive council. But, yeah, it would be nice to find out.
Right. It's on my list. So, anyway, kind of jumping back into, and I basically for tonight, I just want to, we don't even need to, I just want to throw things out for all of us to kind of consider. So, I just highlighted a few of the things that Megan pulled. So one of the things that, come on. Oh my God. I don't know whether it's me or the damn tablet. So Rye had a few things in it. First of all, they actually included a table, you know, in the zoning ordinance type of table, like we have permitted, not permitted, so on and so forth. For, you know, rooftop building mounted, freestanding single family or duplex, and then, you know, this freestanding kind of commercial stuff, and had the nice permitted, not, conditional use or permit stuff. So that's something we need to consider too, is possibly making that check boxes.
There wasn't much on with the ride as to what we're working on with Town Cabin there. Those the larger.
Yeah. And,
whereas
and,
some of the other ones, the other towns had more descriptive for the larger ones.
Yeah.
Since we're already involved in that, that should be something that we.
Right. And some, that one's out the barn, but yeah, I think, you know, we need to consider that too. And Rye also says that, you know, the freestanding solar shall constitute impervious soil. But then the other one from the energy group said that as long as it's vegetation underneath, it should not be considered impervious soil. And I kind of agree with that personally. I mean, that's something we need to consider. But I think if the ground is not sealed, I don't see where it's an impervious.
No.
Right. Rain will run off the panel to the ground and be absorbed. Right. So I don't know why that would be impervious.
Yeah, as long as it's, not paved, then, calling that out is important,
we should probably, again, just continue. I think this is just an idea session, right?
Mm-hmm.
We should probably also consider, though, stating something about proper drainage for the runoff from the panels, not considering them impervious, but if you get a 20-foot high panel that's 100 feet long,
where's the runoff going?
Where's the, going to want some sort of stone and...
Right.
Right?
Yeah. Just like we have
and for your house, right? Same thing.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right. You know, just like you want stone underneath your drip edges and the like, right? It's the same. I mean, I think that's a.
I thought it was interesting. Linda brought up a large scale in rye. I kind of zoomed in on Allenstown in their small yes. scale, and it almost sounds like they don't really define small. So, like, if I throw a charger out for my my tractor or something like that, it almost sounds like it could fall underneath that. I assume it's a permanent installation, but they don't really define it in any way.
I think we would want to. This has got to just be defined as permanent.
Definitely permanent. And the other thing was I zoned in on it was Stantec mentioned covering for like freestanding, having blockage and screening. And it's kind of like, well, it doesn't really work well so much with
solar
because you don't want it screened. But, you know, I will agree that going to Auburn, there's a bunch of freestandings in Auburn and they don't look particularly good, but it's...
I think we want to, you know, I think we need to put some screening language in there that it needs to be screened from neighbors and the roadway mm-hmm. as much as possible, right? And maybe they have to shift it back some to get enough tree coverage or fencing to not have it impact the...
Just because the glare, like the glare off of them is it's glass, right?
One town required it to be non-glare.
It's like a matte finish kind of thing?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know they made those. But, like, if you ever seen, like, glass buildings, like, in a shape, you can, like, nuke coffee if you hold the cup and, like, with a reflection of all of that collecting.
Yeah. I don't know what that building is on Route 1 heading south of Portsmouth. It's a big circular, you know, glass building right across the street from the police station.
I think that's a credit union, I think.
Yeah.
I know what you're talking about.
Credit union or insurance company, right?
Service credit union, mm-hmm. I think.
Yeah, it is. You're right. Yeah. I have come down there and felt like I was looking at somebody welding. Right. You know, just like totally and utterly blinded on Route 1, which is not a good combination.
I've walked into buildings during the summer where you almost had to run in because it was just like reflectively cooking the sidewalk walking into the building because of the angle of the buildings.
Yeah.
Never thought about that. First of all, Linda, thank you for putting all this together and sharing it with us.
Oh, what?
All the solar, didn't you give us these?
I just did the Gilmanton.
Megan
did all the rest of them.
Okay. Anyway, I especially like the Gilmanton, which had this sentence. Placing systems in locations that result in loss of prime agricultural lands is strongly discouraged. Right. It is preferable to locate systems on disturbed land, non-productive farmland, and or rooftops. So I like that they mentioned agriculture, because once that's gone, developed, it's gone, and our soils are so important.
Right. Yeah, and the other thing they had in there too, which a lot of others did too, is abandonment.
Right, the steps to take.
That's another piece we definitely don't want to have, right?
Well, we want to have it in our regs.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You know, but the question I have is, how are we going to know that it hasn't been generating power for 12 months?
Right, that's one of the things that jumped out at me on Stantec is puts it,
they'd be notified, yeah.
Well, the thing is, it's like, system shall be considered abandoned if it's offline for 12 consecutive months, and the owner will be notified by U.S. mail about the abandonment window starting. But, like,
who's monitoring that?
Is the building inspector go and make sure the dial's spinning?
Rich going to put his multimeter on the line?
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, I agree it needs to be in there, but I totally don't know how we enforce it. I completely agree with that.
I was thinking that part of that more commercial, right, versus homeowner grade, like, I kind of don't care if a couple panels is probably not good because it might be still generating a little dead electricity or whatever, if you will, but like the first off one, I meant to say that the last being that abandonment thing would probably be
a good thing to have.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, I don't know how we enforce it. Unless the thing's overgrown with weeds and the panels are all cracked or whatever, we're never going to know, because I don't imagine Eversource is going to call us up and say, hey, first stop, stop producing power 12 months ago. Yeah. Thought you'd want to know, right?
Yeah. Or as if they got 1,400 panels over time, they're going
to
start...
They need to replace them, right?
Well, they're going to start clicking off, right? Like, yeah. All of a sudden, you've lost 60 panels, and yeah. No one's going to know. Like, and we don't kind of care, because it's their business, but eventually, they're going to all stop working. Yeah. And mm-hmm. How's that happen?
Right.
The company, they all do have a shelf life.
The company folds, and you got this field here full of stuff that's not producing.
Yeah.
Well, that's the other thing, too. I mean, just when you're talking, it's like, if it's not been producing for 12 months, and we send out an action letter, how much you want to bet we don't hear back because that we're going to get that back in the mail because that company is...
Return the sender. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So one of them said that they require a bond.
A bond, mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the towns.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
So...
Was that clean energy?
Same as a reclamation bond.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
I was thinking that if the town, actually Brian can probably expound on this quite a bit. So let's say that first stock goes out and the solar field goes dead, and the town decides that it needs to be the panels need to be removed and stuff. Wouldn't we do that and just put a lien on the property? Is that, I mean, that's a lot of legal work and such, but is that? Other than doing the bond thing, that's...
And the other thing is, are they hazardous waste?
Right.
Yeah, it's very hazardous, yeah.
Like you bring a TV to the to the dump, it's going to cost you $20 or whatever it is. It's like there's 1,400 120-inch TVs that we're going to get rid of, or somebody's getting rid of, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, the clean energy did mention that disposal of the structures had to be solid waste ordinance.
But...
They have to get rid of it.
But,
and
I mean,
also, they'd the bond.
The reclamation bond, I mean, they would be paying on that for 20-plus years.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because we'd want a bond that they had to provide proof of every year. We wouldn't want, you know, put it in town escrow or whatever. It'd have to be an insurance bond. I mean, that's certainly a possibility.
What's that cost? If we said it's going to cost $50,000 to get rid of all that stuff, just say a bond for $50,000 renewed every year. Does it cost $500? I have no idea.
I don't know.
It's an insurance policy.
Typically, it's not too expensive.
Right.
Usually.
Right. But, you know, the other thing is that you hate to do something like that. It's just a lot of, you know, overhead.
Red tape. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And
monitoring and everything else. But you don't want to be stuck with it either.
No. That's the other point. Yeah.
So that's, again, this is all about...
Yeah.
Things we need to chew on over the next month or so. So that's a really good discussion. We're not going to get the answers, but that's a really good discussion point. The other thing that popped into my mind from reading all this stuff, do we want to set a max limit on a solar farm? Right? you know?
I think...
And I don't know the... And again, I just... You know, because do we want... You know, 50 acres of land becoming a solar farm.
It's an interesting thing. Mark mentioned at the last meeting that the utility a lot of times will put a cap on it. Yeah, I know property on Patton Hill Road, they wanted to do X. The utility said, no, you can only do Y. I'm like, because then we have to upgrade so much stuff. And then, I think he said that was usually driven by utility. But
if you're not feeding into the Eversource, it's your own.
Right. If you're,
I guess you could
if you're behind the meter, you got
to
have
banks
and banks and banks of battery to store with
to
it, which is very expensive. That's that's why First Stop didn't do that.
Mm-hmm. And you know, that does make sense, though, Dave, right? Because, you know, at any power generation plant, even a little hydro plant, it goes into
the grid.
It goes into a transmission line, the big transmission lines. This stuff's actually being put up into a distribution line, into a standard residential distribution line, so it wouldn't have the capacity to take a boatload of power.
Good point.
So, maybe it's a moot point because of Eversource. I just think it's something we should, you know, is there a max number we want to say?
Yeah. That's a lot of trees cutting down if they're going to be massive.
Yeah, well, and it may be a moot point. I don't know. I just think it would
be really handy if we had somebody from Eversource on our panel.
There was one ordinance
that might help.
One of them did talk about taking virgin property, if you will, to create this, and there were some extra steps. I can't remember which one it is now, but I should have highlighted things. But anyways, there was one town that did address it a little bit. But I guess, you know, the other thing is candy is kind of unique for the most part, that trying to find a place to put in and dump in a lot of power is hard.
Yeah, see, like Hooksett talking about the screening thing, Hooksett said solar systems shall be located and or screened to minimize visual impact from abutting properties.
Right.
And I think that type of thing makes sense.
The Stantec references Holderness as restrictions for large-scale systems. Systems that disturb more than 10 acres of previously undisturbed land shall provide a natural resources inventory that details site conditions and habitat and mitigation efforts to reduce impact to important species and habitat. Mm-hmm.
That's
a lot.
That's the one. Thank you.
Where ground-mounted systems do not require in New Hampshire AOT permit, a stormwater management plan shall be provided, which also makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think we're going to require drainage of some kind, right? Because even if we're not calling it impervious surfaces, we got to realize there's going to be a concentration of runoff. And
any large farms like that, I think they're going to have an engineer involved to analyze. They're going to design the whole layout. So, yeah. I mean,
some kind of fabric under crushed stone or something,
if needed.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. And one of the things here, when we're looking at Rochester, said for height that ground-mounted systems shall not exceed height restrictions for the zoning district. Now, that's another question to think about. Okay, you know, I think we all want to make it so that people get solar panels on their house, put solar panels in their backyard, and make that all reasonable. But I don't think that we want to have in our zoning a first stop type commercial in our residential district. Right.
Right.
So anything in the residential district needs to stay within the
residential.
Right. Yeah. Within the property.
Well, that's why that table would be important to include.
Right.
So it's very specific in where they can be stored.
You know.
Put up.
I think that's a key differentiator we need to make. Anything in the residential districts needs to be used on prem.
What do you mean, use it on prem?
On the premises.
On the premises.
Well, same thing with farms. If you wanted to use it as a farm, it would still be a smaller scale, I would imagine.
Yeah. Right, but, you know, what I'm saying is we don't want somebody, I don't think we want somebody plastering their roofs with solar panels and filling their entire backyard up with solar panels on their residential property and, you know, selling 10 kilowatt hours or whatever back to Eversource.
Well, most of the people that I know in Candia are using the electricity, but anything that's surplus goes into the line. Mm-hmm. So that,
yeah,
by definition, is, I should know what they call that, because it's escaping me at the moment. It's
like net metering.
Net metering, yeah.
Net
metering. Yeah, right.
Yeah, so we could do that. Just that could be a net metering.
Yeah, it's one of the ones that did call out using net metering and such like
that. Right, so net metering, not to exceed. Like you could have a monthly not to exceed X kilowatts or whatever it is.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
Or maybe put it a percentage.
Oh.
So that, because like, I don't know, kilowatt doesn't mean much to me. But 20% of the household, or you know what I'm saying, use or something like that.
That probably makes
But how do you, yeah,
yeah, I guess
how do you measure it?
Yeah, how are you going to know how much?
Except, well, I guess you could say that you could figure it out. Like, if there's 1,000 square feet of panels, you're going to get X amount of kilowatts out of it. But I mean,
depends if it's sunny or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it depends if it's sunny or not. And so I guess it would be, you know, it's an engineering thing when
it's kind of the Wild West.
Yeah, it is a little bit wild. Yes, yeah.
It's really hard to get your arms around and quantify it, and therefore, you got to be careful how we try to regulate it without being overstepping.
Right.
But without being abused.
Well, and, you know, this may be another one of those regulations that we have to put in to kind of protect ourselves that we may not be able to enforce because we don't necessarily, how would we ever find out what their net metering number is, right? But at least we're setting the intent. So if some guy comes in and wants to put in, again, 5 rows of solar panels in his backyard and he's got an 1,800 square foot house, it'd be like pretty obvious that's not just for the household use, right?
Unless he's got 5 electric cars also.
Well, you know, that's just it. Right. That's a fair point, right? We, you know, going forward, we don't know what you may need electricity-wise to run your house, right? If you've got, you know, a Tesla and a, what's the Ford electric F-150 there?
Lightning.
The Lightning. A massive, colossal failure.
Could be Bitcoin mining.
Could be Bitcoin mining, yeah. There we go.
Yeah.
Well, I'd rather be a Bitcoin miner than a coal miner, just saying. There was an interesting one in Rochester. I'm not sure how I feel about it, but roofer building mounting systems, so not extend beyond the perimeter, that is a definite thing we need to... I saw some place said it... It could extend up to 5 feet beyond the roof line.
Wow.
Yeah, now we definitely don't want. But it says external piping, electrical connections, not located at the rear of the building shall be screened from the street.
Yeah, that Rochester is the 5 feet above the finished roof.
That's kind of snobby if you want.
Yeah,
crap in the front of your house, you should be able to have it, right?
I literally read that and went, wow, that's...
snobby.
Yeah, I mean, I understand screening.
That's as bad as having all white candles for Christmas in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
No color.
I thought that was, you know, now we say that, and then someday somebody will do something, and we'll be like, Jesus, you know.
It's kind of an interesting thing, but typically, I think a professional install typically tries to make it look good, but I guess if it's a homeowner hack job, then
it could be interesting.
It could be, yeah, it could be.
Well, that's what Billy wants. I mean,
I've seen houses where right in the middle of their front yard they have their generator. Like first thing you see, you don't see the house, you see the generator, then you see the house. It's like, okay, you know, you got your right to do that.
Well, I told you about the panels that I saw that were right in the front yard of this house. And the house wasn't, I don't think it was more than 75 to 100 feet off the road. And the panels were huge. They were as big as the house, right in the front yard. I'm saying, to me, that is butt ugly.
Yeah, yeah. But, was that Epping on 27?
I think it's either in Epping or Brentwood, one or the other. It's,
yeah.
I couldn't believe it. And they were huge.
They're huge, yeah. The ones on 27, I believe it's Epping, going into Epping. They're huge, but when they first started, it looks like it's a business. The house is back. There's a lot of business.
No, this was a regular residential.
But then they had white fence.
Been
I think
Brentwood.
They made them put the white fence, because I don't think that's going to... Yeah, because wasn't there.
This is stuck right in the front of the... And the panels are almost as big as the house.
Yeah.
I've seen panels on houses, you know, next to houses and backyard that are up like 30 feet.
Yeah.
I mean, just like, so, I mean, that's the kind of stuff that we really got to say no.
Well, those 12-foot satellite dishes used to be quite popular too.
Yeah. Yeah, but
it was awesome for about a year and a half. And then
until
the cable company went in and started blocking everything. It was awesome. But it was huge.
They were huge.
I had one, yeah.
You know.
Giant bird bath.
What's that?
A giant bird bath.
Yeah. That's what they told
me. It wasn't very shiny. No, it was very plastic.
My kids thought it was people talking to people on the
screen. Right. Yeah. Aliens.
Well, I'll digress for just a second. Talking about big dishes. There's a place in West Virginia, Greenbrier, and it's a terrestrial listening station.
Yeah. There's a few of those.
So
yeah.
It's got these massive antennas, I mean, these massive
dishes,
right? And like literally, you can't drive a gasoline powered vehicle into the facility because the spark and stuff in the engines, all the vehicles on property have to be diesel.
Wow.
You can't carry a cell phone, and there's no like, internet connections or anything in the, you know, cell phone connections in the town because the whole thing has to be that silent.
Hmm.
And it's just kind of a weird, like,
twilight
zone. You get out of your car and you walk in and you're like, oh, this is really quiet. and then this like 1970 international travel all drives by with a diesel engine. And I'm like, well, that ain't stopping. And so the other thing that I did not look at, and I think New Boston, I saw Derry or Hook, I think it was Derry had some campground regulations too, but they weren't enough to consider. But I think if we care enough to look at campground regulations, which I think in the long run is not a bad idea, because these little micro campgrounds, off-grid micro campgrounds, are becoming quite popular, and Harvest Host is becoming quite popular.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Micro campground got shut down in town already.
Because we don't have it in our... You can't have a campground in Candia.
Well, you can, but it's just a couple lots.
You cannot have a campground that you're charging for the campsites.
Right. Oh, okay. All right.
Unless it's agriculture,
right?
Camping.
So as Dean Young so eloquently put, let me get this straight. So I can have 5 campsites and grow pumpkins. If people come and camp for free, but they got to buy a pumpkin for $50, that's okay.
Exactly.
Yep. Yeah, that is okay.
Oh, I don't think that it's free. You still have to pay, but it's considered
donation. I think it's
donation. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's what Pete Shivers tried to do.
Right.
Yeah.
The agribusiness.
It still is.
So,
but,
you know, so
that's
you can do.
That's what I was thinking of and wondering about.
Yeah.
Right. It was denied because he was actually charging for the campsites.
Yeah.
Okay, that's the thing you kind of can't
do.
And he didn't have a agricultural business there.
He called it that.
He just called it that, but he didn't have any agriculture on the property.
Okay.
So it can't be an agribusiness.
Unless they have to buy your firewood.
Right, so...
$100 a night.
You know, yeah, if you think about the loopholes, right, the campsite's free, you want some firewood, that's going to cost you. And there's a toll road to get to the campsite, right, you know. But I know that these, you know, and you see them around the big vans that have, you know, like you see a lot of Mercedes with the...
Yeah.
You know, we used to call them conversion vans when we were young, but now they've got like
showers
and they're all self-contained. Mm. And this is the latest and greatest craze. And these people want to go to these little rustic campgrounds and hang out. You know, and there's one piece of property in town that I think we all agree could be a nice campground too, that is sitting pretty much dormant at this point. I don't think it'll happen either, but I'm just saying, I think it's something we need to consider. But I think we also don't want a bunch of big Class A tour bus type campers running through town and going down Critchett Road or going down, you know, going down Patton Hill or whatever.
I don't
believe
it'll happen in our lifetime.
No. This to me is not a huge priority, but I think it's something.
But it's something we should have, because it came up once.
It came up again. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And I think we just need to think about, you know, just
pulling out of the top of my head, and then we'll get out of here, because I don't plan to stand too late tonight, but, you know, just like size, limit the size of the campground, limit the size of the campsites or the equipment.
Length of stay. That's more acreage-driven than anything.
Right, and we don't have enough space, enough big lots for people to put a big campground.
Right.
I agree.
Well, there's got to be a water source. There should be also sewerage. There's right. So many other things yeah. that come into play that aren't in that other area.
Well, we'll see.
That's
that,
already
that's,
in town.
And these are the type of things that we
those
can,
are safety
we can
and
write
health.
Into an ordinance, right, is that if we want to have a rustic campground, we can say that they cannot have water, electric, and sewer at the sites. Right, that would limit it. That would limit the RVs.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so they'd have to have, you know,
well, it'll be self-contained.
Yeah,
and then
they'd
the
have
RVs
to have clean
can
bathrooms
be self.
And
yeah.
stuff like that.
Yeah.
But you know, bathrooms that meet all the specs for the campers. But you wouldn't get these large RVs, and you wouldn't have all the water being used and all the sewer being used because you're not having.
Right, it's only tenting, so it.
Tenting
you can
or like those vans or little
yeah,
pop-up
self-contained.
Trailers.
Yeah.
Just.
Yeah.
Idea scavenging, mm-hmm. you know, because I think we should have something. We just, and I don't have a clear picture of what it should be either, and I think we all just need to think about what do we envision that ordinance being to match reality of today with what we want for the future.
I did have something else.
Yeah.
When we were talking to the candidate, Bob, right? I'll just say Bob tonight. I was wondering, should we change some of the rules for frontage to say contiguous?
Interesting.
My thought on this is that when the... Granted, Bob did this, what do you say, 40 years ago or something like
84.
That? He split this up? Yeah, 84.
Yeah.
So, but when they wrote the rule for 200 feet, let's say 200 feet frontage, it was really to, you know, spacing and, you know, rural aspect. But if you start taking, you know, 50 feet here, 50 feet here, if you live on the corner of two roads or three roads, you could get 50 feet, or, you know, you could divide that up and, yeah, I don't know. Okay, there's a couple of rules. Like there's the 200 feet. I'm curious. I didn't look into like the, you know, I think it's 60 feet for a driveway or a road. Mm-hmm. What if you had 30 and 30 or 30 and, or, you know.
Well, no, but it's got to be, you can only put a driveway on a 60 foot wide piece of.
I didn't look it up. Does it say that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay. Hopefully it does.
You can't add up.
Right.
Yeah.
I'll do it on this 30-foot road here.
I got two footpaths. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
The in driveway is only 30 feet.
I got
the out driveway.
An entrance and an exit.
All right. Yeah. So actually, Bob's property is sort of like that. You can, you know, just do big
horseshoe.
Right?
Yeah. Big circular driveway.
But anyway, so I just sort of was thinking, what was the intent originally, and I know we're kind of stuck with what is written, and you know when it starts talking legalese, right? Like, but maybe this is something that we need to or should think about and possibly look into changing.
Well, I think that the whole intent of having the 200-foot frontage was to make consistent lots, you know,
mm-hmm.
so things weren't all sliced up. But ultimately, we do have lots like his that exist.
Mm-hmm.
So you still have to accommodate because they are a lot of wreckage.
Yeah, and I literally wouldn't want to. I wouldn't want to say that it has to be on the same road.
No, it wouldn't
because the
corner
lots.
Yeah.
Corner
lots. You're right.
So
100 feet on each road. You know.
Yeah. Even he doesn't even actually need that 62 feet though.
No,
he
doesn't.
Need
so, but right. But yeah, I was not. I did not think that keeping because in the York property that is probably going to come up at some point. Okay, you know, 200 feet, yeah. You know, it's you don't want to lock everything down, but I feel like maybe a little
tightening. That was to get to 400 to do the two houses off the one driveway.
Yeah. Yep. So anyway, I thought I'd throw that out and
certainly something to think
about. Good question, for sure.
And the one thing I promise to do for the next meeting is to look at, you know, in the regulations, a couple of things, including if you put a subdivision, major subdivision plan in, and you're planning on doing ADUs, we wanted, you know, an ADU plan
right.
as part of it, because that is an oversight.
Have we heard anything else about Carly Road?
No. Okay. Well, we haven't really heard anything else. They're supposedly coming in with an app, but
okay.
We haven't heard anything else.
Yeah, our attorney sent out to Amy and me the draft of the appeal, and he's hoping once Amy gets back, she was gone today, but if it all looks good, the BOS members can sign the appeal hopefully by Monday, and then he can file the appeal, and we'll go from there.
Okay. Thank you.
Just reminds me of one other thing, real quick. I reached out to Dubois and King, who is a engineering firm, and they do towns, and I reached out to, can't remember the name of them off the top of my head, but engineering firm at Bob's Engineering, yeah, Bob, my buddy Bob down the street, the town engineer for Raymond, and I have not heard back.
You don't want to
I know, right? Just, you know,
whole attorney.
Please.
Yeah, I'm just saying, I didn't think I would necessarily get a wonderful call back, because I know that when I had my conversation with Steve Keach, he said, if you called me a year ago, I would have said no. He said, but I have just hired a new guy, I've got the capacity, so yeah, I'm interested. So I've heard nothing back. I can give him another shout, but I've heard nothing back. So
you did your job.
I still have to get in on the GIS stuff to see who we can get to do that. But for right now, that's where we're at. And since
one more thing,
yeah,
motion to adjourn.
Do I hear
second?
Echo.
We got dueling seconds. And all those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? Perfect. Mm-hmm.